Welcome to Homegirl Nation. I'm your host, Bridget Truong. It's the holiday season, and that means it's time for some festive entertainment. While some shows and movies lean toward romantic comedies this time of year, others offer a more thrilling twist, just like the recently released Audible original Mistletoe Murders 2, which is available to stream right now. Now, this series features a fantastic ensemble cast with many of the talents hailing from Canada, including the delightful Anna Cathcart, whom I had the pleasure of sitting down with recently. Now, you might recognize Anna from her breakout roles in the Netflix hits To All the Boys I've Loved Before and Exo Kitty. This holiday season, she's back, lending her voice to narrate the Canadian Audible original series Mistletoe Murders 2. Let's find out what this season is all about from Anna herself, and let's find out more about this rising star. Let's meet Anna. You're from Vancouver. When I think of Vancouver, I think of the great outdoors, outdoor adventuring.
Totally.
Anna Cathcart growing up, a big outdoorsy gal?
I want to say I am. I think I'm being totally honest. Like, my sister and my dad are like total outdoors people and like totally like big into hiking and cycling and everything. So they kind of took that like more in our family. They took that role of being the outdoor people. But I still love it. I love, like, especially in Vancouver, like in the same day, you can like go to the beach. We can also go to the mountains. You can also go to the forest. Like, we kind of have it all. So I love it so much. And when I'm not at home, like, I miss it truly, like, a lot.
And that's what we miss out here in Toronto. Like, Toronto has its perks for sure, but it's the scenic beauty that we don't get enough of. So where did acting and all of that come in for you? Being in a space as outdoorsy as Vancouver, where did the creative arts come in?
Honestly, I mean, my older sister, she did commercials when I was younger, and I grew up wanting to be like her in every possible way. And I was like, well, I want to do commercials. And I did like two when I was really little. Like, I was like 6 years old and 10 years old. And I did like one. And then I auditioned for my first TV show at 12 years old. And it was totally like, in my mind, you could not be an actor. Like, an actor is like a distant dream. Like, I would love to be one, but who's actually an actor for real? And I ended up booking my first audition, which was like still so mind blowing to me. And I look back on that all the time. And then I moved to Toronto actually for 2 years and lived there while shooting this show. And that was kind of like my like boot camp to learn how to be an actor. And I just completely fell in love with it. And then things kind of just kept rolling after that show, which I'm very grateful for. But it is crazy because it wasn't really something I like chased after, like, oh, this is going to happen. Because I just didn't think that was realistic. I'm like, who's an actor? Like, I was like, that's crazy. But it still happened and it still blows my mind.
Okay. How old were you when you had your first audition? Do you remember?
I was 12. I just turned 12. It was the summer before grade 7. And yeah, it was a very crazy time. And the commercial I had done at 10, it was for like Crayola chalk. It was a very, very big, important day in my life. And I remember leaving set that day and literally turning to my mom. And I was like, that was the best day of my life. I was like, that was like the coolest possible thing anyone could ever do. Like, I just thought it was the greatest. And that, looking back, I'm like, that was pretty defining of realizing how much it meant to me. Like, just doing that one commercial truly like changed something in my head.
And Crayola, iconic brand. What kid doesn't want to be a part of that?
Right. Every time I see Crayola now, I'm like, you started it all.
Your success. Thanks to me. At 12 years old though, because I auditioned for a bit when I was younger too. And I just remember how intimidating it was to walk into casting talents rooms. And then you kind of see people who look like you as well, like 20 other talents. You're like, this is a weird alternate universe. But beyond that, the rejection, like the no's that, because you, as an actor, you're getting no's a lot more than you're getting yes.
A lot. Yeah.
How do you prepare for that?
I don't know. I've been a few people who like have started acting recently or like they've asked me that question too. Like, oh, how do you get used to that? Or like, is that something you should expect? And it might sound like pessimistic, but honestly, I will go into things being like, this is not probably going to happen. I am not going to get this. I am not going to set an expectation. Even if I do well, that's not going to necessarily equate to you're getting the job or you're getting the role. I think that's a really big thing too, is understanding that it's not always personal and it's not because you were bad, so you didn't get it. There's so many incredible people out there and there's so many incredible specific things they're looking for in someone for one role or for one project. And it's not because you're not good enough or or has any, your value gets any lower because you didn't get something. It's it's very specific, and there's so many decisions that go into what happens and who ends up getting a role that it's not personal, and it's not just based off your skill that like you're not good enough, so you don't deserve to do this or anything like that. Is honestly a constant reminder when doing auditions and when getting rejected. It's not always personal. There's so much that goes into it that you don't know. And like you said, you have to expect to get a lot more no's than yeses, and that's kind of how it goes for everybody. So that's definitely a big reminder that you need to know going into this, because it is a really weird industry, and you do get a lot of falling down to put yourself back up. Like that kind of repeats itself, and you have to really love it to be in it and to keep going.
I would think for sure. And then I guess there's an advantage when you start at a younger age, because it kind of thickens your skin a little bit and gets you used to it a lot quicker. But something I would tell myself was that casting directors sometimes don't know what they're looking for until the day of. So don't take it personally. And then the second thing was that kind of like it's an honor to be nominated. It's an honor to get this audition.
That's so true. You know? I love that. Yeah, I think that was a big thing too, that I like didn't realize when I was younger, that for some auditions you have to be like allowed to audition. Like that already is a stage to be like, yeah, we want to see your tape, or we want to have you in the room, or we want to see your work. Like that itself, like you just said, like is a nomination. It is a stage that like you can still be proud of and be excited about. And you also learn from every audition you do and every tape, and totally. You can take what you learn from that for your future work or for your future auditions. And that's huge as well.
I want to know what you've learned in your roles in film and television, and then into this Audible series that we're about to get into. How do you go about preparing for this new kind of medium, another platform, when you are so used to or have such a strong background in something else?
Yeah, getting to work in the audio space was so fun because it was totally different and something I'm not exactly used to, which was like the best part about it. Even just going into the studio and like getting to wear the headphones, like getting to like work with different equipment that I don't normally like see on set was so much fun. And I mean, one thing, it's so much faster, which is so cool. I was like, wow, we were just so productive. We just like recorded so much in such a short time, versus with film and TV, it's such a production and it's so long. And for audio, there is such an incredible production as well, but you don't see it as much as an actor. Like you're not there when all those things are happening. Versus when you're on set, it's such a large process and so many hours. That was really interesting difference for sure. That was like a big one. And specifically for performance, I guess, I would have to remind myself in the booth. And I was like, oh, no one's seeing my face. Like I need to make sure the things that I'm trying to do are heard just from my voice, or the little sounds and chemistry between characters and all these things. That's purely audio, which was really cool and such a different medium. That was really fun to get to explore, and hopefully I can do more in the audio space because it was really fun and it was something totally different.
Okay, wait. So what does preparation look like, or how does preparation differ from film, TV to audio? Because like you said, you're not emoting. No one can actually see your expressions. They can only hear it. So how do you prepare for that?
Preparing? I mean, a big thing, obviously, with film and TV, like you will go into hair and makeup, you'll do wardrobe fittings, you'll understand what your character looks like visually. And for audio, what's kind of fun is to imagine all the listeners, they can picture what your character looks like visually, and you don't have control over that. It's like when you're reading a book, at least if I'm reading, I'm like, I have every single scene in my head and I know what the background looks like and whatever, but that's just in my head. So knowing that going into it and really just preparing, I guess, like I kind of had a vision as well when reading the scripts. I was like, oh, what is Fletcher's Grove look like? What are the other characters look like? What is the town like? And kind of just being in your own world when you're performing, to help me a lot, at least to visualize it myself, while still understanding that like listeners will be visualizing their own worlds. But I don't know, just picturing that and kind of diving in and reading the scripts and understanding the different nuances of stuff, because there isn't a visual picture when you arrive to set. You're like, oh, this is what the set looks like. This is what the background is going to be. This is what we're working with. It's like, it's in your head and it's also going to be in the listener's head. So just putting those pieces together before you get to work, I think, was really important and super fun, because I love stuff like that.
Okay, well, your love definitely shows in Mistletoe Murders 2. This is such a fun series. I just listened to it, and it's quite different from what you've done in the past, but this is what it takes to be an actor. You flex your chops in multiple ways. How did you get involved in this project?
I mean, I first was involved in season one, and it was so much fun because one, just being with other Canadian talent and doing a Canadian like Audible original was so much fun, because I always love being part of Canadian content and watching and listening to Canadian content. So that was a big part of it. And I also love the holidays and I love Christmas. So getting to be in a project that is so festive and kind of has like a mysterious twist, but it's still very like cheery and in the holiday themed was great because I've never done that before and I've always wanted to. So that was definitely a big factor that like really drawed my attention. And just getting to be in a new space like we talked about and getting to explore a different type of performing, I guess, and different medium was a really big part of it as well. So all of those aspects made me really excited to be a part of it. And I was just excited that they thought of me and that they asked me to be in this. So it was great. And getting to season 2 as well, because season 1 was now like a year ago. So hearing that I did well and that people wanted it again was great.
What can you tell us about your character Violet and her growth in season 2?
Violet is, I mean, she's like that classic teenager who loves to get into people's business. At least that's, I think, very classic trait to get into, especially her father and Emily's business. And she definitely wants to see them together and loves to just be a part of also all the mysteries that happen in the town. And she knows she might be overstepping at times, but she doesn't care if she's going to do it anyway, which I feel like is a common trend with teenagers and people at the age that they're like, I need to be up in the business and know what's happening. She's a boyfriend this season, which is a new addition. And he may or may not be a suspect or somewhat potentially involved in some of the mysteries as well. And that kind of heightens things for her. And she has an emotional attachment now to people in these stories. So it was so much fun. And she's also a part of, she works at Emily's store, which adds to her being involved in seeing what Emily's doing and what she's not doing and what she says and what she doesn't say and all of that. So it was great. And I hope she's kind of just going through her teenage years, you know, doing, you know, all those things, being with her single parent and working in the small town is always kind of a balance, but she's making it work and she loves Christmas too.
Yeah. And when you mentioned Emily, I mean, a lot of returning talents like Kobe Smulders, it must have been so cool to have that tight-knit Canadian kind of group, even though you're probably not recording together, but just knowing that all of you are at the helm and in front of the camera to make this all happen. Mm-hmm.
I was on Zoom with Raymond for all of our scenes together. And he was, I believe he was in Toronto and I was in Vancouver. And I had met him a few months later at an event in Toronto. This was after season 1. And I literally went out to him and I was like, you were my dad. He was like, God, we had never met in person. And it was so funny. And we were like, oh my God, family reunion. But that was great. Because yeah, you do get a word together, but you're not always in the same space. And that's something specifically with audio projects, you don't have to be in the same space. So getting to meet later in person was so funny. And I was like, we literally were a family, but we never met. So that was great.
You know what I've noticed about the work that you do and the roles that you've taken on too, they all seem to have some sort of connection with either a lived experience that you've had or something with your life, whether it's cultural representation, or just something within the teenage years. But it shows, I feel like when you connect yourself with jobs and roles that you can confidently speak to, you can hear the passion, you can hear the excitement, you can see it too.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope so. I hope those things are adding to my characters and adding to performances, because totally, I love being able to read a character and be like, oh, I get it. Or like, I see where they're coming from, or something about them, something small about it that is very relatable or hits close to home. So thank you.
Yeah, because like in the past work that you've done, cultural representation is a big thing. Like when I was a kid growing up, I didn't have a lot of that. I grew up in the 90s, a bit of the 80s, and there were maybe 2 Asian women on screen at the time. Michelle Yeoh was one of them. And that was pretty much it. And so to see this, you know, era where representation is valued and talents like yourself can slide into those roles with that experience and that confidence, I think means a whole the next generation coming up.
I completely agree. I think just seeing characters who are mixed race or who are Asian just existing on screen and getting to be a full character who has their own challenges and who is a love interest or who could be a lead character, and their entire trait is not just their racial identity. It's an incredible part of who they are, and it's a huge part of their existence. But it's not the only thing that we talk about. It's not the only thing we focus on.
Yes,
it's so special to see, and is so important. And I feel very lucky that I've gotten to contribute to that and to mean something to viewers and to listeners out there. So it's something I definitely don't take lightly. And the coolest parts, I think, is when I meet someone else who has been firsthand affected by it. And I've met different people who are like, this project really changed my outlook on myself, or this made me more confident to do this or to wear this or to talk about this at school or with my peers. And those are the coolest moments ever. I've been seeing like, it really does make a difference, and it can impact people that I don't know and that are all across the world and that are outside of my like bubble of life. Like, it reaches farther than just me right here. And that's the coolest part.
That's, I love that. So people just come up to you and tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Totally. Or there'll be like comments on Instagram, or even friends right. that I know will be like, I've had an experience like this, or with different types of like representation as well, with Asian representation and queer representation and different visuals of what people look like and different groups of what they've been a part of. Like, there's so many specifics of how people have grown up and people have faced different challenges. So if they can see that in a project that I'm a part of, and yeah, and they tell me about it, it honestly, like, that's what makes it all worth it. Like, I'm like, that's so cool. And that makes me motivated to keep going and to be a part of projects I'm passionate about, because it does make a difference.
Yeah. It sounds like you do take on this responsibility now to have people see themselves in the things that you do and maybe the struggles that you're going with. I know that the advocacy work with anti-bullying that you're a part of is really important to you too.
Yeah. I mean, I think it can be very daunting, I guess. And I think I've talked about this with other people who are in similar positions, and it can feel very intimidating at times as well to be like, oh, I've taken on this role or this platform or this voice that it matters so much and there's so much weight to it, and I care so much about it and how people are being talked about and how messaging is placed. So because of that, there is this pressure, and it definitely can be scary at times. Mm. But I think someone reminded me recently that the fact that someone like me is seen on screen and someone like me is a part of projects, and people who are Asian and who are mixed race are just being shown, that itself is going to do something for the community. And
totally.
That itself, by getting the opportunities that we do and taking them graciously, is already being a movement in ways, and it's already going to impact others. And I think that's a good reminder as well of like, just getting to do this and getting to do this in a grateful and kind manner does something in itself, I guess, because there is a lot of pressure, and it can be really scary too. Of like, oh, am I doing enough? Or what does this look like? Or how can I do better? And I'm always trying to get to that place, but having that reminder as well, because me as a viewer, seeing someone just exist can be enough to feel comforted and to feel understood and validated. So there's definitely a balance between those two things.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I know you mentioned that you're a big fan of Christmas, big fan of the holiday. Me too. I don't know. Is like November 1st an appropriate time to start celebrating?
I feel like, I mean, I'm a huge Halloween person as well.
Oh, okay.
I'm like a big festivities person. So like last night, I was like, if this is like Halloween is going to be as long as possible. Literally this morning, my mom is wearing her Halloween shirt, and I was like, Mom, it's November. And she was like, yeah, but this is my last day to wear it. I was like, okay. That like Halloween will, my decorations will still be up for a few more weeks, and then Christmas will happen later. I don't know when, like maybe like a week before December is when you can feel like we can start listening to music and we can start like putting up cute things. But once December 1st hits, it's like go crazy.
It's go time. So what do the holidays traditionally look like for you?
Oh, I mean, it's important to my whole family, and we have a lot of little traditions that we love following. Like, for example, on Christmas Day, every year we always open our stockings on my parents' bed. So I'll go to my parents' room and open our stockings there. And then we'll go downstairs and open presents. And then after that, my dad and my sister, who are very big athletes, they'll always go on their annual Christmas Day run. And they'll leave to go running. And me and my mom will go to McDonald's and we'll get breakfast for everybody, like takeout. And we'll pay for the people behind us in the drive-thru. And then we'll come home and like they'll be coming back from the run and we'll all have breakfast together. And I don't even know when that tradition started, but now it feels like it's been forever because it's been many years in a row, and it's so cute and it just works really well. And I look forward to it every year.
I love this. What do you order? What's like your typical McDonald's?
Ooh, okay. Well, if it's breakfast, I'll get like an Egg McMuffin. So like
classic,
a classic Egg McMuffin and hash browns, of course. And then because it's Christmas, normally like peppermint hot chocolate, if they have them, that I feel like just like completes it.
I've never had that before.
Yeah. I don't know if they have it every year, but they definitely have had it at times. And it just like completes the festive vibes.
Oh my gosh. I'm salivating just at the thought of that combination. Thank you. Thank you for that. And congratulations on this series returning for another season. And we're just so excited for all the good things to come from you. Thank you, Anna.
It was so great to meet you.
Mistletoe Murders 2 is available to stream on Audible. And don't forget to check out part 2 with the cast of the series right here on Homegirl Nation. And that is with the iconic Jean Yoon. Thank you so much for dropping by for this Homegirl discussion. You know the door is always open.